was 18, didn't have a care, working for peanuts, not a dime to spare. But I was leaning solid everywhere, like a rock, working on a night moves, trying to make some front page driving news, working on a night moves.
Bob Seger returns in the studio for his ultimate hits.
I think I made it when I was ready to make it. And I think a lot of it was attitude. A lot of it was writing ability, consistent writing ability. A lot of it was maturity. A lot of it was the right band. What I achieved in the mid-70s to the 80s was probably the zenith of physical and spiritual and emotional strength that I had in my career. It was just, I was just full of power at that point. These days, it's a little harder to get up to that level because there's just so much more that is important because I'm older and more mature. This is Bob Seger in the studio for my greatest hits.
From 1976 through the mid-80s, Bob Seger hit for the cycle, touching all the bases, first with the career-breaking Night Moves, followed by Stranger in Town in 78, Against the Wind in 1980, and Like a Rock in 1986, with not one, but two live albums recently reissued thrown in for good measure. Easily lost in this story of mega success is the fact that Bob Seger's first platinum million seller, Night Moves, was his ninth album, released after years of struggle to bust out of his regional Detroit home base. Here's Bob Seger with me in the studio.
Yeah, I think we kind of, Bill Simczyk used to say, the Eagles producer, that we smelled the blood. It was his kind of thing. I think we could feel it coming on. The goodwill was really building up. I finally had the right band. Drew Abbott was a terrific guitar player. Alto was great on sax. Charlie was a stormer on drums, you know, and I had all the elements. I had Chris, my really solid bass player forever. I had all the elements in place to finally, you know, had the right guys. They were all hungry. They all wanted, there was nobody who wanted to stay home. Why don't we stay home and play the bars, you know, and be close to our families? Everybody wanted to go around the world. We're ready, you know. We played 265 nights as a Silver Bullet Band.
Wait a minute. There's only 365 days in a year.
Yeah, we played 265. So that's how bad we wanted it. And you get a hunger going there. What we did was we built up a lot of goodwill. When Beautiful Loser, Live Bullet, and Night Moves came out, we had built up a lot of goodwill. People were seeing us and they're saying, "Ooh boy, ooh boy." So there was like a grassroots thing in all these states in the South and in the Midwest, and of course the coasts didn't know we were existing.
They're the last to
clue
it,
in. You know, or Chicago, someplace like that. They hadn't got a clue. I'll tell you a great story. We did Pontiac Stadium, 76,000 people here. I think it was 76. And we went the next night and played for 1,500 in a 1,900 seater in Chicago. The next night. And this is 320 miles apart. And I remember Mike Royko. Remember the famous columnist Mike Royko? Do you remember him?
Yes.
Very, rather acerbic guy.
Yes.
He wrote in the newspaper on the review the next day, Seger will never be anything but regional, you know? And he writes, he hasn't got the charisma. He's not going to be a big star.
And, are you serious?
Seriously.
Mike Royko said that
Said that. And then 2 years later, after Stranger in Town, and after we came in and I think we did four somewhere at Blackhawk Stadium or something back to back, Royko said, I take it back.
Oh, well, you got to give him points for that, then. Yeah. I take it back.
I take it back.
That was the whole column, huh?
Yeah. Saw him last night. He's on his way.
Bob Seger's first hit was the 1968 single Ramblin' Gamblin' Man, now included on the Ultimate Hits collection. But not until a long, arduous 8-year period of grueling one-nighters in roadhouses and roller rinks had passed, would Seger and his Silver Bullet Band enter the top 10. He did with the title song to his November 1976 album, Night Moves.
It's about this this dark-haired Italian girl that I went out with when I was 19 years old. Yeah, 19 years old. She was 1 year older than me, I think. And she was really a hot number.
That
and
1 year at that point in the man's life can make a big difference.
Oh, yeah. And we went out for about a year and it didn't work out. But I was really crazy about her. And all the things that were happening in that song were happening in my life. We would like party out in the fields outside Ann Arbor and farmers' fields and things like that. There was one guy I remember I knew who had a record player in his car, which was great. Oh, yeah. One of these things that were upside down. You put 45s in them, and they would actually go upside down and play. It was an in-car record player.
Never heard of
played
such
45s,
thing.
Yeah. It was very cool. And we would get all our cars, you know, these great 50s cars and 60s cars, and we'd circle them in a thing, and we'd have what was we called a grasser. And we would dance to the music and, you know, everybody would ogle everybody else's girlfriend.
And have a real good time.
And have a damn fine time.
I was a little too tall, could have used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes. And points all her own, sitting way up high. Way up firm and high. Out past the cornfields where the woods got heavy. Out in the back seat of my 60 Chevy. Working on mysteries without any clues. Working on our night moves. Trying to make some front page driving news. Working on our night moves. Summertime.
some high in the sky summit. We were just young and restless and bored, living by the sword. And we'd steal away every chance we could, to the back room, to the alley, or the trusty woods. I used her, she used me, but neither one cared. We were getting our share, working on our night moves, trying to lose the awkward teenage blues. Working on our night moves, mm-hmm. And it was summertime, mm-hmm. Sweet summertime, summertime. Felt the lightning, yeah. Waited on the thunder, waited on the thunder. I woke last night to the sound of thunder. How far off, I sat and wondered. Started humming a song from 1962. Ain't it funny how the night moves, when you just don't seem to have as much to lose. Strange how the night moves, with autumn closing in.
Title song to Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band's Night Moves, with inclusion on the Ultimate Hits collection. Here's Bob.
A song that was very instrumental in me writing Night Moves was Me and Bobby McGee by Kris Kristofferson. You know, singer-songwriters were starting to take to come into fashion. James Taylor, Jackson Browne, Kris Kristofferson. And I related to that kind of stuff, the narrative storytelling. And I think Night Moves came from sort of from that thing too. You know, I like the idea. It was like, this isn't just a pop song. This is like a little novelette.
The inspiration for finishing it was Jungle Land by Bruce Springsteen. His album came out and I saw where he did the two verses and they were very strong, but then he went completely somewhere else. Tempo wise, he had like a multiple bridge. He had various different things go on. And I thought to myself, that's how I'll finish Night Moves.
You know, since I don't want it to sound repetitious, I'll do the first two verses. I'll come back to it at the end, the Night Moves thing, you know, but I will just go somewhere completely different after that. So if you'll notice, there's three different movements after that in the song Night Moves. And I got that idea from listening to Born to Run and Jungle Land, which knocked me out. That album knocked me out.
With Night Moves, Bob Seger went from bars playing four sets to first class and Lear jets.
We started Silver Bullet in October of 73. And then the concert, I think the live concert was what? It was in September of 74 or 75?
Yeah, 75.
75?
Yeah.
Yeah, 75.
Because it came out right after that in early 76.
Yeah, in early 76. And then, of course, it was followed by Night Moves in October of 76. So we had like two albums back to back in 6 months and a lot of stuff to play. And the next thing you knew, we were headlining. We literally went from the bars to the headliners. We missed all the 2,000, 3,000, 5,000
seats. Is that true?
Yeah, we went from bars to barns, you know? Bars to hockey rinks. And we went from cars to planes. No buses. We've never done a bus tour.
Seriously?
We have never done a bus tour. You know, we went from station wagons to jet planes. Oh, yeah. So you're a little bit older and a lot less bolder than you used to be. So you used to shake them down, but now you stop and think about your dignity. So now sweet 16's turned 31. You get to feeling weary when the wet day's done. Well, all you got to do is get up and into your kid. And it was sort of like a thank you to the fans who didn't forget us, whose goodwill helped carry us over the hump. A thank you to radio. There were a lot of people who were, you know, in our corner. And you've told me a few times when you would turn people on to in radio to our stuff as you traveled around as a disc jockey in various markets. And it was a thank you to all those people. Thanks for not forgetting us. Thanks for helping us over this hump. You know, we always wanted to be in the big buildings and really be heard by a lot of people and get our message out and our energy out, and it's great to be here.
That's Bob Seger talking about the inspiration behind the song Rock and Roll Never Forgets. Next, Bob admits that sudden stardom after years of struggle came with a price. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear much more with Bob Seger and other rock stars at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Bob Seger for Ultimate Hits. Rock and Roll Never Forgets.
Welcome back. In the studio, I'm Bob Seger with my greatest hits. Here's Redbeard.
It's a pleasure, Bob. Growing up in the hometown of Motown music and loving the great soul singers including James Brown and the Memphis Stax Stable, Seger had begun splitting recording sessions between his fellow Detroit band members in the Silver Bullet Band and a funkier, more experienced group of studio musicians based in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. It was there that one of Bob Seger's most famous songs would originate.
As far as old-time rock and roll is concerned, that was a track that Muscle Shoals recorded while I wasn't even there. And they just sent it to me. And I just wrote some words to it and sang it. I never really took credit for old-time rock and roll, although I wrote it. I wrote about one-third of it. I'm not even on the writing credits. And basically what I did was the same thing that I did on Shakedown years later. But on Shakedown, I decided to take credit. Was I got a song that had a great title, but I didn't like any of the lyrics. And I rewrote, you know, like I had old time rock and roll, the title, parts of the refrain, that kind of music just soothes the soul. I like that line. Everything else I rewrote.
Just take those old records off the shelf. I sit and listen to them by myself. Today's music ain't got the same soul. I like that old time rock and roll. Don't try to take me to a disco. You'll never even get me out on the floor. In 10 minutes I'll be late for the door. I like that old time rock and roll.
Forever a part of 20th century pop culture by means of actor Tom Cruise lip-syncing to it only in shirts, socks, and undershorts in the hit film Risky Business. That song is certainly a centerpiece of the double disc Ultimate Hits Anthology by Bob Seger. He was so prolific at the time of recording 1978's Stranger in Town album that the title song and another tune, Patience, never made the album.
Everybody in the band was positive of everything that we'd done on Stranger in Town that Patience was the biggest hit we had. It was extraordinarily melodic. But I wrote this song called Still the Same right after I wrote Patience, and it wasn't, to the band's ears and even to my management's ears, as melodic, but the lyrics were better. Still the Same is, of course, about someone who is probably a little egotistical, a little egocentric, a little aloof, and kind of a living on the edge kind of person that is very charismatic, and we forgive that person because of the charisma. And I thought it was kind of a unique little story that we've all known people like that, you know, people that we shouldn't really put up with their changes, but we do. And I thought that was a little more different lyrically. So we ended up using Still the Same, and everybody said, oh, geez, that'll never be a hit.
You always won every time you place the bet. You're still damn good. No one's gotten to you yet. Every time they were sure that you caught, you were quicker than they thought. You just turn your back and walk. You always said cards will never do.
Still the Same, originally on 1978 Stranger in Town, is now included on Ultimate Hits. Still to come, Bob Seger and his Silver Bullet bandmates, all too familiar with struggle, now wrestle with the Python of fame. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear more from Bob Seger at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Bob Seger for the 26th song, Ultimate Hits, Rock and Roll Never Forgets.
Welcome back. In the studio, I'm Bob Seger with my greatest hits. Here's Redbeard.
Thank you, Bob. With the multi-million selling success of both Night Moves and Seger's follow-up in 78 called Stranger in Town, every record company executive, concert promoter, booking agent, music critic, and radio DJ who had written him and his many albums off as a beautiful loser now suddenly beat a path to Bob Seger's door. Even the Live Bullet double album, which preceded Night Moves by 6 months, suddenly started getting radio airplay, with Live Bullet soon equaling the sales of Night Moves. Bob soon realized that fame wasn't a perfect fit.
I think the reaction to stardom was very uncomfortable from 76 through 79 because I had had no reaction for the 12 years prior to that. So I was very suspicious throughout that period. I was a very hardworking person, but I probably wasn't the best person to be around unless you were really in my inner circle, as it were. You know, the band, my manager, my girlfriend, my girlfriend's family, my family. If you weren't within that circle, I was so busy all the time working and trying to continue our success and enjoy it as well, that I was quite closed off. I think it wasn't until 1980 that I really opened up. And that's why, again, why I have such fond memories of Against the Wind. I think I was at that point I had relaxed, and I think you can almost hear it. There's less desperation, I think, and I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but Against the Wind is far more relaxed and offhand than Stranger in Town or Night Moves are.
Seems like yesterday, but it was long ago. Jane, it was lovely, she was a queen of my night. There in the darkness with the radio playing low, and the secrets that we shared, the mountains that we moved, caught like a wildfire out of control, till there was nothing left to burn and nothing left to prove. And I remember what she said to me, how she swore that it never would end. I remember how she held me oh so tight. Wish I didn't know now what I didn't know then. Against the wind, we were young and strong, we were running against the wind. And the years rolled slowly past, and I found myself alone, surrounded by strangers I thought were my friends. Found myself further and further from my home, and I guess I lost my way. There were oh so many roads. I was living to run and running to live, never worried about paying or even how much I owed. Moving 8 miles a minute for months at a time, breaking all myself, searching, searching for shelter again and again. Against the wind, little something against the wind, I found myself seeking shelter again.
deadlines and commitments. What to leave in, what to leave out. Against the wind, I'm still running against the wind.
Title song to Bob Seger's 1980 number one seller, Against the Wind, is included on the Ultimate Hits package.
I think there is a time in every performer's life and in every successful performer's and creative person's life when everything is very easy to do. It's still very hard, but it's easier. You're at a time, maturity-wise, you're at a time, youth-wise, where all that's important is that career. You know, and you're very focused on it. As you get older, you start to realize that there are other things that are important too. And I don't think you have, it's as easy to create on a spontaneous level. And I think at that point between 75 and 80 was probably physically and emotionally the high point of my creative life as far as having it be easy. If that makes any sense, because physically I was young enough and mentally I was hungry enough to ride through those four albums. After that, I think some of the stuff is actually very, very interesting. I think after 1980, and in a lot of ways, I like it better. I think it's deeper and richer, but it's also is more narrow. It's coming from a different place. It's coming from a person who has done it all. For lack of a better, you know, he's been to the mountain four times. And now he says, well, now I can kind of just do, I don't have to worry so much about the market. And I don't have to worry so much about this and that and that factor. And I can just kind of explore. And so for that reason, I like all the stuff, you know, from 74 on, I would say Beautiful Loser, I think it stands up pretty well as an album too. And prior to that, there was an awful lot of playing and very little writing, you know, and it shows. And what I achieved in the mid 70s to the 80s was probably the zenith of physical and spiritual and emotional strength that I had in my career. It was just, I was just full of power at that point. These days, it's a little harder to get up to that level because there's just so much more that is important because I'm older and more mature.
But stardom is a demanding mistress, and the price of admission is steep. So was it ambition that drove Seger and his band to work so hard, or something less obvious?
You know, that's when your relationships start ending and stuff like that. You know, is when it just takes its toll on you. You know, and I think everybody in the band lost a marriage all the way through it. You know, everybody did. Yeah, everybody did, management included. You know, and so it was. You know, I think that was when we started to take a little more time to make the records and spend a little more time at home, you know? And I think everybody goes through that, you know? You have your energy cycles, you know? And, but I would say I was probably the chief driver. I certainly, and I would have to attribute it to the fact that I was poor at one time in my life. I know Drew Abbott, our guitar player at that time, used to say that, you know, people ask me why we work so hard while we're always going. He says, there was a time when I was hungry, you know, and I didn't have any food. And it wasn't really that Drew was broke. His parents wanted to get, but he was too proud to take it. You know, he wanted to be a musician and he couldn't get work. And he remembered being hungry. I remember when we used to be on the road, Drew would eat faster than everybody else. And we would just crack up, you know, and he'd say, "You never been hungry." And he'd say, "I was."
Stood there boldly, sweating in the sun. Felt like a million, felt like number one. The height of summer, I'd never felt that strong, like a rock. I was 18, didn't have a care, working for peanuts, not a dime to spare. I was leaning solid everywhere, like a rock. My hands were steady, my eyes were clear and bright. My walk had purpose, my steps were quick and light. And I held firm to what I felt was right, like a rock. Like a rock, I was strong as I could be. Like a rock, nothing ever got to me. Like a rock, I was something to see. Like a rock, and I stood arrow straight, unencumbered by the weight of all hustlers and their schemes. I stood proud, I stood tall, high above it all. I still believed in my dreams. Where'd they go? 20 years, I don't know. I sit and I wonder sometimes where they've gone. And sometimes late at night, oh, when I'm bathed in the firelight, moon comes calling a ghostly way, and I recall like a rock, standing arrow straight, like a rock, charging from the gate, like a rock.
10 years after Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band finally booked passage on the Starship, they continued with multi-million sales on the 1986 album Like a Rock. Never known as an innovator or groundbreaker necessarily, nevertheless it was Bob Seger with the song Like a Rock who changed the pop cultural taboo in America against using hit songs for advertising products. General Motors Chevrolet Trucks Division first approached Seger and his manager.
They called us. They said it tested super high, you know, and we could really, you know, probably save a lot of jobs in Michigan, you know, which is, of course, so permeated with the auto industry, the big three here, GM being the largest. They wanted me to do the commercial, and they sent it to me. And it was very graceful, and I thought it was really good and everything. But I said, I just don't want to do a commercial. And then I went into a bar with my fiance at the time, who we're married now. And this guy approached me and said, how come you never, literally, out of the blue, said, how come you never do a commercial for the auto industry? You know, they could really use your help. And I told my manager the next day, I said, he said, oh, they sent him. You know, the ad agency sent him. Somebody sent him. And the ad said, no, we didn't send him. Nobody sent him. And because they couldn't have known where I was going to be or anything else, you know. And I decided, you know, I'm going to do it. And the great news is, you know, that the company's doing much better, and trucks have been a big part of it. And we did save a lot of jobs, I think, and or we helped, you know. And so I think it was the right thing to do for us.
As his fans noticed fewer albums and tours as the 80s became the 90s, a funny thing happened to Bob Seger on his way to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Real life happened.
Throughout the 80s, I had the death of my mother. I had several relationships break up that were rather distracting. I had I tried different producers. I tried being produced by Jimmy Iovine, deferred a lot of the stuff to him. Wanted to, you know, just trying different things. I think that's the eye-opening thing that has happened to me, and the death of my mother and the birth of my son, all within the 5 years, has really changed me as far as the way I think about things. You know, it's very sobering and very illuminating.
No matter what you think you hold, you'll find it's not enough. No matter who you think you know, you won't get through. It's a given L.A. law, someone's faster on the draw. No matter where you hide, I'm coming after you.
Shake down, break down, take down. Everybody wants into the crowded line. Break down, take down. You busted, busted. Shake down, break down, hurry. Just about the time you think that it's all right. Break down, take down, you busted. Shake down, break down, take down. Everybody wants into the crowded line.
This is Redbeard in the studio thanking my guest Bob Seger. For interviews and exclusive live performances by the biggest names in rock, visit inthestudio.net. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Barbarossa Limited Productions, copyright 2011, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunat, theme song by Andy Timmons. Be a part of the In the Studio Network at inthestudio.net.